Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Learning to Dance in the Rain, a book by Lori and Brian McDermott, and they can be found on the web at learningtodanceintherain.net. Our guest tonight is Dr. Edward Close, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, anything on your mind today?
Yeah, like you, I probably want to go to sleep because a little jet lag from the West Coast trip. But I was reading, and I'm sure many of our listeners have read articles about artificial intelligence. I'm sure you have too.
For
it's just
years.
Becoming more and more talked about and more prevalent. And I recognize artificial intelligence can have a huge effect on technology and in business. The computers have unbelievable abilities now, but they're also talking about how they could be lifelike, or you could create these robots, not like we used to see in the Jetsons back in 40, 50 years ago, and that they would be, they recognize tendencies and they learn patterns. So theoretically, you could have a buddy, or you could clone yourself, the theory, or be immortal through one of these robot beings that have artificial intelligence. But I'm a little aghast at the thought, that people, it's even been suggested that you could have a robot loved one that's no longer in the physical, but have that person around as a companion. That seems like a horror to me.
This is the same conversation we had years ago when they cloned, what was her name, the sheep? Was it Molly? The first clone.
A goat?
I thought it was a sheep. The first clone that was out there. And then not much later after that kind of news broke were people lining up to clone pets that had passed. I guess somehow you were allowed to do that, but you were forbidden cloning a human person. But the concept is the same. You get attached to the pet. You love the pet dies, and now you want it back. But are you really getting it back when you're getting a clone?
Yeah, well, that's...
And that's the same question. Are you really getting it back when it's artificial intelligence?
Well, absolutely not, because, in artificial intelligence never talks about consciousness. Consciousness never enters into the equation.
Okay, so now let me throw this at you then. If the cloned thing, the cloned cat, the cloned dog, even a cloned person, does not have consciousness, because consciousness is the soul, the spirit, the personality, whatever you are calling it, that's a clone. It's a biological clone of the person that was there physically. It doesn't come equipped with soul. So if the soul then would engage a cloned being the same way it would engage a cloned fetus, then why not would a consciousness engage an artificial intelligence?
Well, it's an interesting question. I never gave it any thought, but I would think that if you were able to clone a human being or clone an animal, that clone would be a conscious entity.
From what, how do you draw that conclusion? If the mind is separate from the physical body, and you're reproducing a physical body, you're not reproducing a mind.
Yeah, well, it's not a robot, and it's not programmed, you know, and it's not there aren't computer chips that are guiding it. It's a living, breathing entity that was. I mean, you can't say it was born into this world, but it was. You know, it came.
It's still concluding that it has a soul.
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, assuming that it would, you clone somebody, and that person or that clone was a living, breathing, talking, thinking entity. Would it have a soul? I don't know how to answer that. You know,
the only way it would, if you're using the scientific information on cloning, would be if there's some way to show that your consciousness is derived from DNA, which nobody's been able to prove. So if an entity, and that goes back to the same philosophical discussion on fetuses. When does a fetus become a person with a soul?
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't think that consciousness has very much to do with your DNA at all. So, in that respect, you may be right that, you know, a cloned entity, you know, would not have a soul. I think the danger with the artificial intelligence stuff is that if you imagine, you know, we fast forward 100 years and you have all of these, you know, entities running around, appearing, you know, acting like they're human,
mm-hmm.
With no appreciation for music or art or with no emotions.
No compassion.
No love.
Right. How do you have a world like that?
It's a scary thought.
We're moving towards a world like that.
I know. It seems like getting closer and closer. But, and a lot of scientists today will even quickly point out that the human body, as a human being, is in essence a highly programmable computer. So I don't know where this is going to lead, but it ain't looking too good as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's from our perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, if a soul can enter a body at birth or before birth to become that personality, that consciousness of that being, then why could it not then enter a being created by artificial intelligence?
Okay, give me a week to think about this. Okay,
we'll talk about it next week.
I know, but before we go to a break, I know tomorrow, I think, is the last day for that early bird rate at the grief retreat.
You are correct, right.
So we wanted to mention if you had thoughts about attending the grief retreat in Chester, Connecticut in July.
The weekend of July 14th.
Be time to go on the website, read more about it, and make a decision and save some money. They usually wonderful, you know, gatherings, small, intimate, and very meaningful with mediums and professionals. So check that out. We have a wonderful guest tonight. Looking forward to speaking with him, Dr. Edward Close. So we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to get the good Dr. Edward Close on with us. So stay with us.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who is trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Edward Close. Our sponsor is Learning to Dance in the Rain, a book by Laurie and Brian McDermott, and they can be found on the web at learningtodanceintherain.net. Bob?
And Dr. Edward Close is an alumnus of Central Methodist University, the University of Missouri at Rolla, and Johns Hopkins University. He's earned degrees in mathematics, physics, and environmental engineering. He's the author and co-author of 7 books and more than 150 technical papers and articles. He's a sought-after teacher and guest speaker across the USA and internationally. He's received a number of honors and awards, including the coveted Harding Award from the International Society for Philosophical Inquiry. He's a member of 2 high IQ societies and the Exceptional Creative Achievement Organization. He's a recognized polymath. He has pursued postgraduate studies in several major universities and conducted independent research in cosmology, philosophy, intelligence, consciousness, mind expansion and enhancement, the origins of Christianity and Eastern religions, and he's currently actively involved in interdisciplinary research in mathematics, relativity, quantum physics, quantum brain dynamics, alternative medicine, and consciousness studies. Website is erclosetphysics.com. Welcome to the show, Dr. Close.
Thank you, Bob. I'm very happy to be with you today.
And, you know, as I just mentioned in your impressive bio, so you have advanced degrees in mathematics and physics and environmental engineering, things that most of us would consider left-brain type of professions. Usually when we talk to, mathematicians or engineers, they're not so open to phenomena that defy mainstream thinking or can't be explained in reductionist terms, but you're a little different, and are you not?
Yes, I think I probably am. There are probably a few more like me out there, but I got very interested in science, physics in particular, at a very young age, and knew from the age of about 14 that I wanted to be a theoretical physicist. However, I had some experiences, even as a child, even before that, that would now be called out-of-the-body experiences. And I always, as a child, as a young adult going into university, I thought that science pursues anything and everything that's real, that we experience as human beings. But I found that what we were being taught in the universities is basically materialistic and doesn't have room for experiences like those I had had. And therefore, I didn't talk about them much for a number of years because you get sort of ostracized. They think you're crazy, and that there's no basis for it. But the time has come, I think, when science has to open its eyes and realize that if you're going to be truly a scientist, then you have to be open to all human experiences, especially those that can be documented. And more people like Dean Radin and like Dr. Nepi and myself, we are finding proof that even hard-nosed scientists are going to have to accept at some point.
And what I found most intriguing in your background, as you mentioned, you had these experiences as a child, but you also described not having to learn math and language. Actually, you described it as you just remembered them. And when that struck me, and it got me thinking, when you didn't have to learn them and you just remembered them, I mean, some people might say that it's a case where you were remembering past lives. Others might explain that you were accessing information fields that most of us can't perceive. How would you describe this ability?
Well, as a child, it was very natural to me, and I didn't know for a while that it was, any different than anything anyone else experienced. But in fact, mathematics in particular, when I was exposed to especially algebra and geometry and the basics, I thought, well, yeah, I know that stuff. One summer between school years, I got interested and started deriving theorems and things, and of course very excited about it, and then found out when I, this was just in high school, and when I went to school that somebody else had already found these theorems and these concepts. But as far as languages are concerned, I did have some background, although neither one of my parents spoke any language really other than English. Two of my grandparents were of Germanic origin, and one of my grandparents, my grandmother on my mother's side, spoke some German. So I was exposed some, but somehow when I started learning, I had a friend and the two of us, while we were still in elementary school, got some books and started learning, and I said, this is amazing because I could read the Buchstaben, which is Germans don't use that print anymore since World War II, but it was all very familiar to me. But the math in particular, algebra was like playing with blocks, and it was just obvious to me that certain things roll out the way they do. So from that age, I felt that mathematics is something that's basic to reality and even to the way the human mind works. But the way I see it as right at this point in time is that there must have been some, well, the research that Dr. Nepi and I are doing has shown us, and we have a little different perspective. Vernon's is more philosophical and from the viewpoint of an MD and PhD, he is a little more careful than I am to talk about what is speculation. From my point of view, from my experience, and from the mathematics that I developed, it's provable that we actually are embedded in a nine-dimensional field, if you want to call it that, but just the way that a line is embedded in a plane and a plane is embedded in a three-dimensional volume, it continues on. And the above the ninth dimension, and this is all developable with mathematics, above that ninth dimension, it's what has been called transfinite. Well, the transfinite envelops everything else. So this is kind of like what some people have called the Akashic Record, that sort of thing. So even when I had an experience in the pyramids, I felt that I was being given access to this information on a wider basis than I would have normally in everyday, ordinary consciousness.
So, and by the way, I would just tell our listeners that the work that Dr. Close is referencing that he's doing with Dr. Vernon Nepi is soon going to be putting out a series of books called Solved, where these somewhat deep mathematical explanations are going to be available to lay people like us, so that we can understand them as well. So I would look for those. I would imagine you're going to be publishing those soon.
Yes, they're coming right along. We don't know exactly the venue. We published our first book together was Reality Begins with Consciousness, which overturns the materialistic basis of conventional mainstream science and says matter is not the origin of mind and consciousness. It's exactly the other way around. Matter and space, time, and energy are manifestations of consciousness, and they are developed and guided by consciousness, by a primary form of consciousness. And that's where the logic and the mathematics and everything comes from. So it's there to be discovered. It's not like something that we make up. And I know many scientists think mathematics is just a tool to be used to solve problems, but to me it's far more than that.
So it seems to me that you're an example. Let's assume, based upon your work, that there are we are part of a nine-dimensional universe. We only see one finite part of this. And that part seems to be governed by its own individual physical laws. But you're an example where I think that we can access these other dimensions and gain maybe these other dimensions can influence our thoughts, or we can access information from these other dimensions. I mean, is that a plausible explanation as to how you were able to know things that you really shouldn't have known?
Yes. The first examples or experiences of that I had even as a child, and then even while I was in undergraduate school. But the more recently, in working out the mathematics to move from mathematics that everyone's familiar with, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, and differentiation and integration, and the things that are used in engineering, to move from that to a dimensional mathematics, I developed something called dimensional extrapolation. And it's based on two very well-known mathematical theorems, the first one being the Pythagorean theorem, and the second one being Fermat's last theorem. And they allow me to move conceptually, but I think we do this subconsciously. I think we're aware of much more, that everybody is aware much more of much more than what we normally are, because the physical senses just give us connection with, we usually say three dimensions, actually it's with five, because we have three dimensions of space, depth and height and width, and then we have one dimension of time. Actually, we're only privy to a quantum point in time. As we move along our own timeline, but then we're also privy to a point, a quantum point in consciousness. And what I find is that it's very convincing to me that the nine dimensions are three of space, three of time, and three of consciousness. And the complexity of these dimensions increases as you move from one up to nine and into the transfinite and at the tenth dimensional level.
So does your model of consciousness allow for survival after physical death?
Yes. In fact, when you bring this together with physics, now here's another thing that, in my opinion, is a mistake in the way we have pursued science. We separate these things out into fields of study, and over the last 200 to 300 years, it's become so separate that we think physics and mathematics and biology and psychology are all separate studies, but that's only because of the way we approach them in a limited manner. In my opinion, they are all part of one whole thing, and that thing is reality. And because of this, when you add in physics, and I describe it in terms of variables of content, whereas the dimensions are variables of extent, when you bring in content, which is mass and energy and consciousness, then what you find is that there is a universal law of conservation. We know it in physics as conservation of mass and energy. But when you realize that mass and energy are two forms of the same thing, and consciousness is also a form of that same thing, then it's quite obvious that conservation of consciousness is just as true and as valid as conservation of mass and energy. So from that theoretical point, if you will, it says that nothing is ever created or destroyed, it only changes in form. So our consciousness and our physical form can change, the physics and the energy can change, and the consciousness can change, but it's never destroyed. So just because we leave the physical body, and this is the importance to me of the OBEs, the out-of-body experiences that I've had, that tells me that consciousness is not dependent upon the physics of the body and the mind, the brain. It's exactly the other way around. So, yes, survival after destruction of the physical body is not only plausible and feasible, I don't see any way that it could be otherwise.
I'm happy I understood that. and it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, Dr. Kosa, you gave me a good laugh when I was reading your background, because I thought of some of my own grandparents. And when your grandmother found that you can speak complete sentences at 9 months, she said to you that you're too smart to live.
Yes.
Found that very amusing, because I could hear my own grandmother saying something like that, you know.
Yes, she certainly did. And, of course, my father's response to it was, well, you haven't seen any close children before.
So you mentioned that you were at the Great Pyramid in Egypt, I think it was in 2010. And even though you had OBEs as a child, now again, as an adult, you again had a series of OBEs, and you describe it as getting a great deal of information downloaded into your brain. You know, some of it was in verbal form, and some not. Do you think that the physical location, the geographical locations, or sites have some sort of geomagnetic energy that provide a conduit to this reception of this information, or does it have nothing to do with that?
Yes, I do believe that location has something to do with it. Where I was born is in a valley called Arcadia Valley in the St. Francis Mountains, a small group of mountains kind of within the Ozarks region, but they are hard rock. They're rhyolites and granites. They're Precambrian. And I was more or less born in the bullseye of that weathered Precambrian hard rock. Well, the same kind of rock stores energy. Quartz crystals were used in radios. In fact, I built a quartz crystal radio when I was about 5 or 6 years old. these rocks contain memories, and I think that has a lot to do with what I experienced in the Great Pyramid and at the ancient rock city of Petra in southern Jordan.
Interesting. So, you also mentioned that some of the information that you received in verbal form was in a mixture of Egyptian and Aramaic, and you also mentioned before that, at least in some of your family tree, that that may have been part of your heritage. So, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it, or if you thought about that at the time.
At the time, I didn't. It's been since then that we all get these this marketing from Ancestry.com, and I decided, well, I've always kind of known that I'm mostly European background, but there were rumors in one side of the family that we had American Indian background, and there were rumors of this and that, and so I thought, well, I'd get my DNA done. And what it turned out is, yes, I'm mostly European, a lot of Northern European, but also there's some Ashkenazi European Jewish in there. And then there was undescribed Middle Eastern and Northern African. And it's interesting that I was drawn. I spent 3.5 years in the Middle East in the 80s, so I had an affinity for that area, and then went as a consultant to a company doing a documentary film in Egypt and Jordan in 2010. Because I have some knowledge of languages and ability to learn languages pretty quickly. Mm. And, of course, 3.5 years in the Middle East, I'd learned quite a bit of the Semitic languages, Arabic and Hebrew. And so I recognize those. And the ancient Egyptian is a little different. But when I had this experience, I spent 2 days of not sleeping or eating and keeping my eyes open, because every time I closed my eyes and relaxed, I started I would go out of the body again, and I would start seeing faces and symbols and hearing sounds, including language. And the bad part of it was it made me physically ill, because when it happened in the Great Pyramid, best way I can describe it, it was all of a sudden I could feel the motion of the earth under my feet, which the earth rotates at about 1,000 miles an hour at the equator. Would have been about 700 and something where I was. And then I could also feel the movement of the earth around the sun, which is much faster. It's about 67,000 miles per hour. And then the movement of the solar system around the center of the galaxy. All put together, they're moving about 500,000 miles an hour. I could feel all of these competing motions, and it made me physically ill. And when I couldn't stand up, I was fortunate that there were a couple of friends who grabbed me as I started taking a header onto the stone floor to kept me from doing that. But an interesting part of it is, just before this happened, a ball of light or energy or something came out of the corner of the room and struck me in the forehead. I never said anything about this, but the two guys that caught me found me about a day later, I think, when we were in Jordan, and asked me if I saw that light that came out of the corner just before I fell over. So I thought it was, you know, a subjective experience until they told me they had seen it as well.
Well, in purely scientific terms, wow. I think we need to write a biography on you. These experiences, it's such an interesting, you know, most people think that, you know, those personal experiences and these very significant experiences were mutually exclusive from, you know, people of science. And here we have this integration of the two. We have to go to a break. We're talking with Dr. Edward Close, and the website is erclosetphysics.com. We have more to talk about. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com. I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Edward Close. Our sponsor is Learning to Dance in the Rain, a book by Lori and Brian McDermott, and they could be found on the web at learningtodanceintherain.net. We'd like to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website regularly for all events and announcements. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Our next webinar of the year is Anybody in There? Evidence for Survival from Hauntings and Apparitions Research, presented by Dr. Nancy Singrone on April 5th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Our annual Holiday of the Earth raffle with the drawing set for Earth Day, April 22nd, is up on our website just waiting for your entry. You have only a month left to enter and win as many as five medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Bobby Allison, Heidi Jaffe, Nancy Marlowe, Ginger Quinlan, or Dustin Livers. It's only $5 to enter, and that $5 goes a long way in providing services to both the bereaved and the curious. Our annual grief retreat has been open for super early bird registration on the website, but that will end on March 31st, which is tomorrow. We do recommend booking early, as last year the rooms of the retreat filled up and some attendees had to stay off premises. If you're booking early, please keep in mind our no refund policy. This event only gets better each year, so please plan to join us this July 14th through 16th. Be one of only 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and featured spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Rebecca Ann LoCicero, Joe Peretta, and Gina Simone, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, Great Nonprofits, and WellZoo. And lastly, if you are business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Edward Close. And I'd like to get into an area, again, I keep uncovering more and more surprises as I learn more about you, Dr. Close. But I know that you're also an authority about essential oils and alternative medicine, and again, it's something that
one wouldn't necessarily expect from a physicist and mathematician. It doesn't seem that the oils are related in any way to your other work in the physical sciences, or perhaps they are. But tell us about your interest in essential oils.
Well, that started with my wife, who became a registered aromatherapist, and I was working as an environmental engineer. And so I'll give you a little, just a real quick, because I know we don't have much time. I went from physics and mathematics, from teaching, and I more or less left that academic realm and went through, I got a training in geology and hydrogeology while working with the U.S. Geological Survey for 12 years. But because of my math and physics background, I was one of the seven original founders or charter members of the Department of Interior Systems Analysis Group. So I went from physics and math, more or less pure science, into applied science as an environmental engineer. And through doing this modeling and understanding how complex the environment is, then when I had an environmental problem that with a client, that an engineering problem that involved mold, I found that when my wife suggested this, that, you know, try using these, and so I had to work out the engineering aspects of it and how to apply it and everything, found it was very effective, and also found that the oils are actually very fine molecules and very complex organic compounds that were developed by plants to ward off the things that deteriorate and kill plants, and that's among other things, it's mold, various kinds of fungi, and so that is beneficial to the human being, because we're also attacked by fungi in various forms, and it's often misdiagnosed. But at any rate, it turns out the oils, when I did the analysis of subatomic and atomic particles with the what Vernon and I were doing, and we found that there was the third form. I mentioned that there's matter, energy, and consciousness. Well, the third form, consciousness, exists in every atom and every molecule. So it turns out that the molecule are the elements of the periodic table that support life, organic life, have a much higher proportion of what we're calling Gimel, which is just a Hebrew letter to stand for the agent of consciousness in the atoms and molecules, all the way from the quarks. And they're necessary in order for there to be a universe, even for there to be a symmetric spinning elementary particle. So all of it is connected in that because the oils are natural and not pharmaceutical, you know, created, they have all the natural synergistic qualities of essential oils as they are in plants. And so they're very beneficial without the side effects of pharmaceuticals. So that's a quick thumbnail of how the things are connected in my mind.
Yeah. So a lot of people wonder if we do, in fact, survive, you know, physical death, and we, our consciousness, you know, moves on into other dimensions, you know, they wonder whether we retain our individuality, you know, or our personality, or do we merge more like an Eastern philosophy into a universal consciousness? Yeah, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's something I've thought a lot about. excuse me, and talked about some in one of my books. It's no longer in print, but the book was called The Book of Atma and was published in 1979. And it's more complicated, I think, than we just go on exactly as we are. I think we're much more complex and ancient beings than we think we are from the birth in this life. I would refer you to Edgar Cayce, who said we follow different streams of consciousness that we have from ancient times, even that we're developing. And the lives then are akin to, we're part of everything because we're embedded in this primary consciousness, but we retain our individuality, but it's not necessarily the same as the one we have as the person with the name we have in this life. But it's a progression, and I would say that while most fundamentalists don't like to hear this, fundamentalist Christians anyway, evolution is a fact, but it's not physical evolution, it's spiritual evolution that actually is the driving force for everything.
Hmm. We, unfortunately, are running out of time. It's unfortunate because we had the same experience in talking to Vernon. You two have such a vast storehouse of knowledge that we could talk forever, so we're going to have to make a part two out of this. But and of course you have this added dimension of a personal experience which I suspect was the driving force between many of your discoveries. So I'll tell our listeners again to follow the work of Dr. Edward Close and Dr. Vernon Nepi. Dr. Close's website, where you can keep in touch and learn more about the upcoming series called Solve, that the new model of consciousness. You can go to erclose, E-R-C-L-O-S-E, the letter T, physics.com. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We really appreciate it, and I hope you'll join us again soon.
Oh, I would enjoy it very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and thank you very much.
Thanks again. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle Prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Alex Hanna, Veronica James, Rich LeBly, Lauren Ramnath, Vince Mattia, Isabel Ginsberg, Diane Archangel, James Rafferty, Donna Mello, Stanley Mullen, Marianne Pierschka, Glenna Irwin, David Haith, Michael Tim, Helen Montalto, Cynthia Post, Evelyn Langram, Linda Bonventry, Linda Ellis, Grayson Pierce Keene, Maverick Orion Keene, Eddie, Sandy Raybould. And now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.